In 1591, Henry decided to alter his strategy. He decided to move into Normandy and capture the city of Rouen, which was another important bastion of the League. Henry was further assisted by an English army, which had landed in Normandy to assist with the siege, but again, Spain was on hand. Another army under Parma marched in from Flanders, and it again succeeded in relieving the siege of Rouen in January of 1592. So that by the end of 1592, for all his alliances with the English, for all his victories in the field, Henry remained a would-be king without any capital. Nevertheless, by 1594, this situation would change radically, and Henry of Navarre would be widely recognized as king, as King Henry IV. There therefore arises the question of how could this possibly happen, and the answer has two fairly distinct parts. The first facet to the eventual triumph of Henry IV is the simple threat of anarchy and the effect that this would have on the willingness of French elites to resist Henry. The 1590s saw truly excruciating suffering among the rural masses, and the outcome was a tidal wave of uprisings all over France. Now, some of these revolts did have a religious aspect, and it was almost always a Catholic religious aspect. For example, in Normandy, the so-called Gautier declared their refusal to accept the heretic Henry of Navarre as king and resolved to extirpate his Huguenot following. But even in these cases where there is an explicitly Catholic ideology behind the rebellions of the peasants, the actual direct stimulus to revolt was almost always material. Together with the depredations of the soldiery, the most common grievance of the peasants was the weight of war taxation. And in this regard, with regard to resistance to war taxation, the appeal was decidedly ecumenical. We'll find both Protestant and Catholic peasants resisting those who would tax them. Rural uprisings were quite different from the movements of either the Huguenots or the Paris 16 in that they were virtually untouched by conscious revolutionary doctrines much more popular in the cities. There were a few times when rural uprisings took on the appearance of class warfare, but it was really not so much the normal administration of the seigneurial regime, but rather its gross abuse in circumstances of civil anarchy that prompted the risings. Just to give you an example, in southwestern France, there was a group of peasants called the Croquants who rose in 1594, and they declared that it was just to put down tyranny by force. It almost sounds like an echo of a revolutionary doctrine. But if we read further on in the manifesto, what we'll find out is that the Croquants declared that the crown belongs to the king by divine, natural, and human law, and that the church, nobility, and procedures of justice must be upheld. That is to say that the peasants tend to object to the abuse of the system without really wanting to call the system itself into question. Now, despite the fact that we can say that there's an ideological limitation to how far the peasants are really willing to go, the higher orders saw rural rebellion as endangering really the very fabric of society. I think it's probably fair to say that what the higher-ups would regard as the threat of anarchy could less sympathetically be regarded as the peasants endangering the entrenched position of privilege enjoyed by the aristocracy. But nonetheless, the aristocrats were in a position to do something about this, and peasant revolts were thus often suppressed with truly extreme cruelty. Nevertheless, even the most arrogant noble could see that the peasants could only be pushed so far, and passive resistance by the peasantry, quietly refusing to pay their tithes, their rents, or their taxes, hiding their wealth in their barns, or burying them underground, would bedevil the authorities for really many years to come. Social disorder wasn't confined, however, to the countryside. There was an awful lot of it as well in the towns, and ultimately, what happened in the towns was rather more important than what would happen in the countryside, despite the imbalance of numbers. What was happening was that social tensions within the urban classes were getting sharper and sharper, and although the religious idealism of the League expressed a kind of unity, that unity was rapidly becoming really more a facade than a reality. 2 weeks after the murder of Henry III in August of 1589, an electoral struggle took place in Paris within the Paris 16, a struggle between the more radical elements of the 16 and its conservative members who were more supportive of Mayenne and the other aristocrats in the Catholic League. The corporate structure of the Parisian bourgeoisie and the survival of municipal venality of office had provided a really strongly entrenched position for the more conservative nobles of the robe, and it was hard for the 16 to get rid of them. In August of 1589, radical members of the 16 in the suburbs therefore challenged their previous leaders in the town hall, but they failed to replace them in the elections. Having failed to replace them in municipal elections, the radicals then began a campaign of intimidation, of confronting people in the streets, of physically beating them, and from this campaign, even the senior magistrates of the Parlement were not exempt.